south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. In the last show, if you remember, I spoke a little bit about funerals and cemeteries. Now, just to remind you, if you're driving around any Latin city, big or small, even out in the county, if you see a storefront or a house or a chicken bus or even a taxi cab with a big black bow on it, you know, like a bow tie, that means someone has recently passed away. That's a tradition here in Latin America. You get a big black bow and you stick it on your place of business, front door or whatever, and you leave it there for around a week. And you'll notice when people pass by, especially the older folks, the over 50 and 60 crowd, God, is that really the definition of old? Anyway, they'll make the sign of the cross out of reverence. So you'll see big black bows around once in a while. And not surprisingly, if you're actually looking for those things and keeping count, you'll see most of them on chicken buses. A few years back in a show, I mentioned that chicken bus drivers and their helpers have what's considered the most dangerous job in all of Latin America. More assaults, shootings, killings, and robberies with that career, if you can call it a career, than any other in all of Latin America, far outpacing what you might consider the usual hazardous and dangerous jobs like construction, mining, farming, fireman, cop, etc. Oh, and by the way, number two on that list of most dangerous jobs, you'll never guess. Or maybe you will. How about lawyers running neck and neck with politicians? They're always getting shot at and bumped off. Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch, huh? Yeah, because, you know, they're making deals with the devil, not to mention the narcos. And, of course, they've got their big snouts dipped deep into the public trough. And in the case of politicians, once elected, they can guarantee their friends, families, and cronies a lifetime of overpaid employment. So, naturally, they'll do almost anything to stay in office, including bump off the competition. Which is why every so often, and not enough, if you ask me, so many governors, mayors, senators, etc., show up in the papers or on the 6 o'clock news as being victims of foul play. Which is why when you're watching the news and you see a high-end, expensive SUV just riddled with bullet holes, you can bet it's a narco, politician, lawyer, or a businessman heavily involved with one of those three. And you know, there's that school of thought, when it comes to narcos anyway, you can't stop them from fighting between themselves. There's always turf wars. So if you're an optimist, you can look at it as if they're providing a service, being that they're self-limiting. You know, Darwinism, survival of the fittest and all that. So they're culling their own numbers. What's not to like about that? For the most part, that's what's happening. Now, I know when you first get down here to Latin America and you start looking at the 6 o'clock news and reading the paper, or at least looking at the pictures, I know how terrible, even frightening that looks, because you just don't see that stuff up in the States. Well, I take that back. Sure, it's always happening in the ghetto, but since ghetto assaults and shootings in low-income neighborhoods are not newsworthy, you rarely hear about it unless there's some looting, rioting, multiple deaths, or cops involved. Bottom line, down here in Latin America, you're going to see that stuff on the news and in the papers, but it's not going to be in your neighborhood. You'll be living far away from that kind of stuff. In fact, in my 27 years down here, I only saw one incident like that up close. About a year ago, on a very nice stretch of the Pan American Highway near El Salvador, I saw an expensive late model Mercedes-Benz alongside the road with about a half dozen bullet holes in it. Now, by the time I drove by, the cops had been there for at least an hour. They had the crime scene tape up and the place blocked off. So it's not like I was Johnny on the spot. It was later that night on the 6 o'clock news when I saw that the car was driven by a lawyer connected with the government. And you know, those are just the kind of stories that keep the average American from coming down to Latin America. Which is okay with me. I say, if you're the average American, don't come. You won't like it here. You'll find it hard to fit in. There's no safety net for you, for one thing. Nope, no nanny state either. The fact is, most of us gringos down here are picky about our gringo friends. We only want smart, above average, educated, astute, and thoughtful gringos down here, don't we? And you know, when you're off the gringo tourist trail and you happen to run into a gringo, there's a very good chance he'll be that kind of person. Unless, of course, he or she's on a military mission, a do-gooder mission, or works for the U.S. Embassy. Then all bets are off. Now, when you're on the gringo tourist trail, you're much less likely to run into the type of gringos that can stimulate your mind and you might even want to hang with. Even gringos living on the tourist trail for a very long time can often disappoint. Yes, when you're on the gringo tourist trail, you'll often meet a lot of closed-minded gringos who still cling to and support the first world nanny state. You know the type. And usually the two questions that separate the men from the boys go like this. Number one, how'd you make your living back in the States? And number two, how'd you end up living down here? All you have to do is ask those two questions when you meet a gringo, and you'll pretty much know where he or she is coming from. Best to explain this with a little story. Not so long ago, I was sitting in my favorite little place in Antigua, Guatemala. That would be the cigar bar, where you could pop in anytime you want, have a real Cuban cigar, where no one would dare complain about secondhand smoke or the virtues of a fine Cuban cigar. By the way, let me just state for the record that once in a while I do smoke a Cuban cigar. By the way, in Latin America, they're called puros, meaning they're the pure, the original from Havana. Oh, and sometimes they'll call them Habanos too, but mostly just puros. Hey, every ser humano, that's human, has to have a vice or two, right? What's yours? I'd say I smoke about one a month. Not a habit by any means and nothing to write home about, but you know, you do meet the craziest, strangest, most interesting people in that little cigar bar. Owned, by the way, by a German gringo. And the cigar thing, well, that's part of the experience of hanging out there. It's a self-selecting sample, you know. Not that you have to smoke a cigar. You can have some cognac or rum, tequila, whatever. Pick your poison. Yep, you'll definitely find a very strange cross-section of humanity in there. Like I said, people who smoke good cigars are a self-selecting sample. First off, it definitely screens out the cheapskates, the do-gooders, and the backpackers. Yep, a place like that would be off-limits to the kumbaya crowd, you know. Yep, you'll meet some extremely interesting world-class travelers, not to mention some clandestine types with pseudonyms, too. In fact, last time I was there, I met a guy who owned a gold mine, a retired FBI agent who's so pissed off at the U.S. he'll never go back, and get this, a Midwestern gringo married to the daughter of the ex-president of El Salvador. By the way, the ex-president's in jail, so what else is new, huh? Old John Galt even ran into a British guy there who was working under a U.S. government contract to censor Facebook and Twitter. Did you even know they did that? Well, you might have heard rumors, but John Galt met and argued with one of those guys in the flesh. I hope to tell more of that story later. Stay tuned. So, to say you run into all kinds of the most interesting people in the world there is an understatement. Of course, you'll run into perfect dickheads there, too. The kind of people I was so glad to leave behind when I left the States and hoped I'd never run into again. But when you're on or near the gringo tourist trail, there are plenty of those guys to go around. Like the blowhard I ran into not so long ago in that cigar bar. A retired guy, but pretty young, living in Latin America for the past 5 years and loving it. He was a retired public high school guidance counselor, receiving his bloated pension. Hey, not to get off the track here, but I will. How about my own experience with a bloated high school counselor? Now, like every junior in high school, I had that requisite interview with my guidance counselor. When I walked in there, he was on the phone ordering parts for his fishing boat. He had the blueprints for that boat spread out in front of him on the desk. That's all he really gave a damn about. I even heard him say as much on the phone. Anyway, he looked at my records and he said, "Your SAT scores are way up there and you're good in math. And you say you want to go to engineering school." And then he shook his head negatively and said, "You know, that's not a very good idea. Boeing, Lockheed, General Dynamics, and the big aviation companies are laying off engineers like crazy." He said, "Look, Johnny, we went to the moon. It's over. To be an engineer these days is a bad career move. Meanwhile, I got a full boat engineering scholarship. And 4 years later, when I got my undergrad engineering degree, I had no less than 6 engineering job offers before I even graduated. Companies were coming on campus like never before to interview, months before our class even graduated. Because, you know, during that time, someone invented a thing called the personal computer, the PC. Man, was my guidance counselor an idiot. In fact, I've got a few public school teachers in my family up in Chicago, and they always told me everyone wants to be a guidance counselor. It's what they call in Chicago a sack job, where you just sit around, talk on the phone, drink coffee, see a few kids. You've got an office, no classes, and you just show up and get paid. It's well known that a guidance counselor's job is a refuge for lazy-ass teachers, and why so many people want a job like that. Hey, but this story really does have a point. Remember, I was sitting in the cigar bar right next to a former high school guidance counselor. And now he's telling everyone who will listen what a great businessman he is. He says, you know, when you're retired, you do have a lot of time on your hands, and I decided to start a business. And then he said, if I'd have known how simple and easy it is to start a successful business, I'd have done it a long time ago. By the way, the reason why this guy came down to retire in Latin America is because he came as a backpacking gringo some 30 years ago and saw how cheap and easy the living was and promised himself someday he'd retire here. Anyway, this guy was going on and on how easy it is to do business here. And then another gringo in the bar looked at him and said, yeah, I have a business in Latin America too. I know exactly what you mean. It took me about a month or two to get the paperwork together and just one inspection and I was able to open my doors. But, he said, up in the States, my brother just opened a business and he was faced with 16 different inspections before he could open. Then the guy looked at him crossways and said, why do you think I'm down here doing business? Because you and the likes of your kind ruined it for us up in the States. Yeah, it used to be easy to have a restaurant business until about the 1980s, the guy said. Then every month or so, another inspector and another and another. And all of them had to make their mark. They'd fine you, change this and that, new HEP filters, grease traps, roof vents, add another parking place, bathroom stall, new urinal. You need stainless this and stainless that. Change this to safety glass, no wooden shelves or cupboards. He said his umbrella coverage went from $150 a month to $1,200 a month. In just a couple of years. And then he said, it's just so difficult, it's not worth it. Then you come down to Latin America, and you find out it's just like back in the 50s and 60s. You start up a business and you're not in partnership with the government. What a relief. And you're right, it's almost too easy. And then the high school guidance counselor said, wait a minute, why are you laying all this on me for? What'd I do? And the other guy said, because it's guys like you who've worked for government all your life. You vote for any politician that promises freebies, more benefits, and more time off. You're for any legislation that supposedly helps the common man and puts the burden on business. And now you come down here and have the balls to tell us how easy it is to do business. Yeah, and if you could vote in this country, you'd ruin it for us all down here, too. Talk about irony. Now, believe it or not, there were maybe 10 people in that little cigar bar, and 3 of them gave the guy a round of applause. Man, I wish I would have caught that for a YouTube video. Yep, there are a million stories in the Naked City, especially when you're sitting in the cigar bar in Antigua, Guatemala. And you know, during my January Expat Insider Seminar, I rounded up about 10 seminar guys during our free time, and we headed out to that little cigar bar. Yep, but a couple of our seminar ladies came along too. And you know what? They did not come away disappointed. Yep, they have their own stories to tell. Now, if you think that story I just told was an exaggeration, come on, who'd go into a place, meet a person for the very first time, and lay into them like that? Doesn't sound quite plausible, does it? Well, I can tell you this. I've been in that place more than once when good old John Galt was holding court there. I'd say at least twice I saw him nearly get in a fist fight with one of those jokers. You know the type, same resume. Generally an expat pensioner sucking off the government trough. You know, career paper shufflers just waiting it out for that pension. Yep, they get a few drinks in them and they're the first one to tell you how screwed up the world is and how it should be fixed. Meanwhile, they're the ones that f***ed it up in the first place. Oh, and by the way, when you're on the Gringo Tourist Trail, a town or city where you find gringos everywhere, you'll see a lot of gringos owning restaurants. That seems to be the thing they like to do best. I don't recommend it because, like I say over and over, you don't want gringos as competition. However, if you have a niche, a certain kind of food that no one else is offering, or a certain special technique for preparing food, you can do just fine. In fact, clean up. For example, I know a gringo who put up an authentic Texas-style barbecue rib joint. And man, did he get it right. It even looks like you're walking into one of those roadhouse barbecue joints in Texas. Well, that guy's doing fine. In fact, he's branching out all over the place. But he was the first one in with such a joint. Now, he's pretty much on the Gringo Tourist Trail, of course. Now, if you try to do that off the Gringo Tourist Trail, I'm sorry, Latins don't know what Texas barbecue is. So obviously, this guy was marketing directly to the gringos in the area who had the occasional craving for such food. So his product, the marketing, and his presentation were spot on. But again, he was first in. By the way, I just saw a survey in a big Latin newspaper, and the question to the people on the street was, if you suddenly came into a lot of money, enough to start a business, what kind of business would you attempt? Okay, they've got the man on the street photos of 10 people here. Our first person, a university business administration student, Colorado Sebastian, 26 years old, says, if I had the money, I'd open up an ice cream store. Why? Because people are always buying ice cream and I think I can make a lot of money. Bad choice, Mr. Sebastian. Sorry. And you're a business admin student, huh? Next, we've got Jessica Samoya, a 23-year-old communications major. Oh, man. Surprise, surprise, she'd open up a restaurant. One that sells delicious food at very low prices. Wow, that's unique. Why? Because she says her mother is a great cook, has many good recipes, and it will be a success. Sorry, Jessica. Next, we have another college student, Brian De Leon. Brian says, I'll open up a clothing store. Everyone's got to buy clothes. And I'd specialize in selling quality clothes to teenagers. You know, there are a lot of clothes out there of bad quality, he says. But not mine. I'll sell only the best. Sorry, Brian. Nice try. Next, Esther Jimenez. She said she'll open a restaurant right next to the free public university where she goes to school. She said she'll sell healthy food instead of chatarra, which is junk food and Doritos. Sorry, Esther. Not only will you be in immediate competition with Colorado and Jessica, college kids will always prefer Doritos to anything healthy. Next man on the street was Jose Schock. He says he'd put in a bakery, saying without a doubt he would have the best, tastiest donuts and cupcakes. Then he says it can't miss. Sorry, Jose, unless you got something extraordinarily special, I don't think so. Next, we've got Carolina Alonso. She's a 36-year-old housewife, 3 kids. She said she'd open up a roadside barbecue place with select meat and chicharrones. You know, that's fried pig fat. She said she'd put it in a nice location, not her own neighborhood. Oh, Carolina, not another chicharron restaurant. Now, we've got Hector Galvez. He's 28 years old. He said he definitely would sell food, but not traditional food. Like, for example, he said the food that I like. Informal food, like tortillas, hot dogs, hamburgers. That's hamburguesas in Spanish. But not in my neighborhood, he said. Now, get this. He says too much competition. I think he's the only one with half a brain. Okay, Hector. Bad idea, but at least you're thinking ahead. Next, we've got Francisco Monroy. He's 53 years old, and he said he would open up a hardware store. But not only selling hardware, he'd sell hats and work clothes, plates, cooking utensils. And he says he'd sell them cheaper than anyone else in the area. Okay, Francisco, that means you're going to import everything from China, right? I think that's been done like a million times. Next, we've got Emmanuel Castro. He says he would open up, get this, a dollar store and sell everything for a dollar, just like it says. Then he says, my next option would be to open up a barber shop. All you need is a chair, a place to work, and a scissors. Then he said he'd pocket the rest of the money. Hey, now, there's a survivor, huh? And finally, our 10th man on the street, Cesar Camé. He's 38 years old, and he says, by the way, this might be the best idea of all, he says he and his wife will open up a daycare center. He says he thinks it'll work because he knows there are more and more women in the workforce, and they have to drop off their kids somewhere. Then he says, get this, he'd combined his daycare center with a little library so the kids could learn to read and have a big selection of books. Not bad, not bad at all. There's a guy who's looking at future trends. There you have it, a cross-section of the mindset of the average Latin on the street. the competition you'll be dealing with if you start a brick and mortar business. Which of those ideas would you put your money on? Yep, the guy with the daycare idea. In fact, I think if a gringo or gringa started a first world style gringoized daycare, now there's an idea. Just a thought, but bottom line, 5 out of 10 people questioned would open up a retail business selling some kind of food, which should definitely tell you that's not the business you want to be in. I don't care how great your grandma's marinara sauce is or how fantastic Aunt Tootie's lasagna. Don't do it unless you've got something really special or you're the first one in with a brand new food idea or fad that's already taking off up in the States. All right, moving on now. Already I'm getting emails asking if and when my next Expat Insider Seminar is going to be. Well, barring the collapse of a major tipping point or an international disaster or any number of rotten things that could happen worldwide, I'm looking at the week right after the 4th of July, 2017. So if you want to get on that early bird waiting list and get all the updates, send an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. In the meantime, I urge you to check out expatplanb.com. If you're wondering what you can do in the meantime to get that Plan B rolling, there are a lot of things to consider before you get your boots on the ground, you know. And one of the best ways to get started is to check out my new Expat Essentials course at expatplanb.com. Okay, and now for our Latin American fact for the day. Did you know that 70% of Latin Americans cannot swim? In fact, they drown at a rate nearly 3 times higher than first world people. Whereas it's been reported that 60% of first world Americans can swim, and up to 80% could save themselves if they had to. I should talk. I can barely swim myself. That isn't to say I couldn't save myself if I was in trouble, but just don't ask me to save you if you're drowning right next to me, because guess what? You're going down and I'm not. Now, as for some of the statistics on drowning in Latin America, turns out the vast majority of drownings occur on the Pacific Ocean side. The water's murkier, there are more undercurrents, and unlike the Atlantic and Caribbean side, the water tends to drop off fast and deep, which is why if you're going to have a beach house and plan on going into the ocean, it's always a better bet on the Atlantic and or Caribbean side. However, the trade-off there is on the Caribbean side, you get those nasty hurricanes. Yeah, you get them on the Pacific side too, but since the winds generally move from east to west, that means on the Latin American Pacific coast, the hurricanes or typhoons, whatever you want to call them, are quickly forced out into the ocean. It's the same reason why so many hurricanes hit land on the Atlantic and Caribbean side. I know for you climatologists, that's a vast oversimplification, but you know, I'm a simple guy. A while back, I was talking about Brazil and how inflation's taken over there. Big taxes are doubling the cost of most imported retail items like TVs, computers, iPhones, washing machines, cars, etc. And that crime is epidemic in the medium and large-sized cities. In fact, some of you listeners must remember about a year and a half ago now, it was all over the news, at least down here anyway, I don't know about the first world, where they caught a guy on camera in broad daylight robbing a drugstore. And as he walked out with the loot and into the street, a guy jumped out of a passing car, grabbed the thief's loot, and took off with it. So it was a double robbery within about, I don't know, 30 seconds. Now, that YouTube video went viral, but it's not unusual. Not in the big cities in Brazil. However, there's one quasi-legit business that's booming in Brazil. Sex tourism. Now, according to one of Brazil's biggest daily newspapers, O Globo, there are now more than 4,000 internet sites promoting sex tourism. Now, here's a little sample on how these sites advertise their services. This comes directly from one of the sites. It says, "Our young ladies are not only sex goddesses, they'll also act as beautiful drivers and tour guides, interpreters, dance partners, and virtual business associates." Whatever that means. Then it says, Brazil's Minister of Tourism assures that these internet sites are being watched by the federal police. And though the minister says they have no way of quantifying the number of people taking part in these sex tourism programs, their main focus, he says, is to take action when minors are involved. Admitting that since Brazil receives over 6 million tourists a year, they have not the personnel, the force, the money, the equipment, etc., to investigate even a small fraction of these sites. In other words, they have almost zero priority with law enforcement. By the way, the countries in Latin America with the most sexual tourism would be Brazil, Costa Rica, Panama, and Argentina. Now, it's little known that one of the biggest sex tourism capitals in South America is Buenos Aires. According to a recent article on the subject, and I'll translate this, it says, women and girls often end up being trafficked in Argentina. They come from the countryside, lured by false pretenses into jobs in Buenos Aires, the most modern and cosmopolitan city in South America. International human rights groups say the Argentine government has long looked the other way or even acted as an accomplice in the sex trafficking business. Said one high-level government spokesman, many poor rural girls are tricked into sexual slavery, lured by false offers of work. A girl, for example, from Misiones, a poor Argentine province, answered an ad in the newspaper for a nanny in Buenos Aires. They paid for a ticket, and when she arrived, she found it was a front for a brothel. She was held as a sex slave in the very middle of one of the nicest Buenos Aires suburbs. Then the article says, some officials, mainly in the provinces, that would be the boonies, including police officers, legislators, and mayors, protect brothels where sex trafficking goes on. Judges receive bribes from traffickers and then purposely fail to investigate cases, and complaints from local sources are often dropped. Now, Buenos Aires is considered the Paris or New York of South America. It's also one of the largest cities in the world, with around 16 million people, and very European in style and culture. However, it's expensive and government's gone wild, with Big Brother somewhat out of control, as you'll hear in a second. Try to figure this one out. Believe it or not, in the province of Santa Fe, Argentina, the government produces its own generic pharmaceuticals. Jeez, not even the U.S. government produces their own drugs. But let's not give them any ideas, huh? Anyway, the Argentine Government Health, Safety, and Sanitation Department have announced that for the third year running, the government will distribute 200,000 sildenafil pills free of charge to the public, a measure that should eliminate the abuse and or misuse of the drug otherwise known as Viagra. Yep, Viagra. Say what?
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.